I'm just going with the flow, so.
You're listening to Three Wise Truck Guys from Key Advisors.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody, and everybody listening, and especially to the two other Wise Truck Guys. Greetings to the Three Wise Truck Guys podcast. We're glad you're with us today. We're going to continue our discussion on some service operations today. This will be the last one of these podcasts that we'll do for a while on this topic. But before we start, Mark, welcome to you. Hope you had a great Memorial Day. And John, same to you. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend.
Well, thank you, Keith. I had a great one. John, sounds like you had a great one getting to see your granddaughter.
I did. And Keith, I'm trust you did too, because you're looking very festive here still a day after Memorial Day.
Thank you. We did. We had a great time.
Very patriotic. Good luck for you.
Thank you very much. So let's start as we always do, with what we've seen as good and bad out in the marketplace. John, we'll just start with you, if you don't mind.
You know, I'm approaching this from both sides of the coin, okay? Same issue, and I'm going to state the obvious here to kind of do a little setup for my deal. But, you know, inventory levels are rising, and I think everybody sees that. You know, U.S. Class 8 retail sales going up, and that means OEMs are producing more, and OEMs producing more means inventory levels are going up. And of course, that means that the long lost, forgotten boogeyman called floor plan interest expense start to show up again. Okay. And, you know, when we couldn't get trucks and it was easy to forget about how important it is to manage floor plan interest expense. I've seen a lot of P&Ls, and we've seen guys with 6%, 7%, and 8% return on their new truck department, which are numbers that we haven't seen in a while. I've even seen some in double digits. Okay, so people are making darn good money selling new trucks, selling used trucks, but we've sort of forgotten in all that how important it is to manage floor plan interest expense. Okay, so I'm going to just throw this out there as a little bit of coaching, right? The good and the bad. If you're on the good side of the ledger, you want to make sure that you're managing your stock inventory levels to the unit counts that are in your plan. And hopefully you've defined those in your plan, okay? But if you're planning on having 75 used trucks in your inventory and 50 new stock trucks in your inventory, you got to have a guide. You got to have something to manage to. If you didn't put that in your plan for this year, it's not too late. Start testing some targets so that you can institutionalize that in your 2024 plan. You've got to monitor your floor plan interest expense, and that's more true on sold and process inventory than it is on stock inventory, because that's where you get eaten up and your salesmen couldn't care less because they think they've got packs, and that's your problem, okay? So you need to be monitoring your floor plan interest expense every month and make sure that you're taking corrective actions each and every month. And then, you know, lastly, Keith, my advice to help the good guys separate themselves from the bad guys is be disciplined, right? Everybody on this podcast has an overaged asset disposition policy, and nobody on this podcast follows it, okay? So it's time to start putting some teeth back into some of our blocking and tackling policies that we put in place. The opportunity to continue to earn attractive returns on your whole goods department is right in front of you, and the difference between the winners and losers is going to be those guys that really pay attention to floor plan interest expense and have a plan for how they're going to do that.
You know, John, that's interesting. We, one of our customers that we do the emerging leader projects for, one of the final projects for that group was this whole idea of shrinking from day of receipt of the new truck to actually collection of cash. And they were, you know, the number that it impacted them was $4 or $5 million of flooring expense if they could bring it back to what it should be. It was a crazy number.
You know, Keith, and this is a whole subject in and of itself. So I don't want to circumvent what we're here to talk about today, which is service, of course. But man, this is so important to the profitability of your business. This is one of those leaky buckets that you and I have talked about at ATD half a dozen times. So this is it, man. It's right here in front of us. What are we going to do about it?
Yep. Very good. Thanks, John. Mark, we'll turn it to you.
You know, I talked to, I guess my good and bad. It's a little bit different, but it's about service, of course, okay? But I talked to a client lately, or not too long ago, okay? And when I walked into the shop, he had trucks everywhere, okay? And juggling repair orders and so forth. And I asked him about how he did his shop scheduling and initial diagnosis and set promise times and how he handled all that, okay? And basically his response was he told all customers to bring it in. That's what the OE is telling them to do. Say yes and jam in the parking lot, and then the truck is captive, okay? And when I questioned him a little bit further, he made a comment. He said he had a service advisor once who would only schedule a set number of trucks and give customer realistic diagnostic times and sometimes several days down the road, okay? And he fired him because that's not the way he does business. He said he makes more money this way. First of all, I know he's not making more money this way. That's why the OEs are putting in these triage programs and so forth. And yes, they want you to say yes to the customer, but you've got to be geared up and able to handle that basic function of diagnosis so the customer knows what the time is. We all, or most of us, are experiencing demand that outpaces our capacity, but tell the customer the truth. I think, and we've talked through the triage piece in prior podcasts, but it's about process, it's about structure, it's removing waste from the process and so forth. And I think just to add to those discussions, there's really a few few important realities today that the service staff should be on top of, okay? Customers still bring the same set of basic questions when they come into the service drive. However, they have a different set of expectations with all the marketing of these programs and so forth. And that's what makes up service satisfaction, but more importantly, customer retention, okay? And retention is the true measurement of what you're doing, right? The dealers that understand that, okay, and adjust to it and make it part of their culture will sell more trucks, have more repeat customers, and go forward. And I think most of the dealers, certainly most of the dealers I see, have embraced it at different levels. But I was blown away how there's still some people doing business like we did 30 years ago. Just say yes to everybody and jam up the back lot. If your back lot is full and you don't have a dedicated triage program that you really believe in, time to move up and get it done. So that's kind of the good and bad. I could tell you a lot of good stories, dealers to do it right, but what it really caught me off guard and blew me away that there was somebody still doing business that way. So
interesting. Yeah. So you talked about 30 years ago, and I don't know if it's good or bad, but it was maybe an observation, and it really started me thinking, because I don't know the answer to it, and both of you are much smarter than I am, and so hopefully you can point me in the right direction at least. The question was brought up. We're talking about the valuation. What's a dealership worth today? What's the blue sky worth? And somebody asked the question, anybody know what the impact of electric vehicles are going to be on the valuation? Now, I don't think we're going to see that for a while, because I don't think there's enough volume of these out there. But it started me thinking about what is, you know, we've talked about this a lot. John, we've talked about it a lot in terms of what it's going to do to used values, what it's going to do to service and parts. Really got me thinking about, what does this business model look like? Because I don't know what the estimated maintenance on an electric truck is going to be. I mean, do you bring it in every 50,000 miles to check the motor, the wheel end motors over? Is there battery maintenance? Is it all repair, and is it $3,500 a truck or is it $10,000 a truck a year? And it really started me thinking about What does this look like? What is it? What does the absorption model look like? What does the profitability model look like? You know, I certainly there has to be some idea of what ROI is going to look like on the investment of the charging stations that and the electrification of the property that they're having to do. It's just an open-ended question because I certainly don't have an answer for it, but I found it very intriguing.
I think I think there is some data out there regarding less moving parts and certainly less service and there still is maintenance, okay, but I don't think anyone has quantified that yet, and it's probably too early to do so because there's not enough volume in any one place to do that. But certainly, it's going to change the model drastically. And when you really start thinking about that for a while, you have a sleepless night or two, I think. So,
yeah.
You know, Mark, I think you hit the nail right on the head. There's a lot of risk, right? Somebody told me there's only 11 moving parts on a Tesla, and two of them are the windshield wipers, which are not exactly high margin replacement parts. Okay, so this is a big question. But you know, to Mark's point, there's still a lot of moving pieces. You know, the three of us have sat on this call, and we've gone through a couple of generations of CNG trucks, and we've been through a hybrid, we've been through an LNG, and now all of a sudden, when people are starting to understand the true cost of electrification and what the dealerships are going to have to do with high charging and slow charging stations. And, you know, I still think there's some, you know, the weight of the product, there's still a lot of moving pieces here that have to come into focus before we determine, number one, is EV going to change the commercial vehicle distribution space? And then number two, you know, fuel cell technology is.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, last week, I think it was, maybe the week before, Toyota put out an announcement, you guys probably saw it, that they have built an internal combustion hydrogen engine now. Okay. And the fuel cell people that are building fuel cells to produce the electricity instead of batteries, okay, stock is rising pretty good in the down market right now. And I mean, it's, I don't think anybody knows for sure where this is all going to land, okay?
It's a great question, though. And if you're a dealer principal, you got to be thinking about this right now because the emerging technologies, you know, there's competing paths and there could be multiple winners depending on duty cycle and application.
Yeah, I think that's the point. I think there will be multiple winners based on the duty cycle, based on how you're using the truck. So,
yeah. But it's interesting. I don't know if it's an Irish blessing or a Chinese curse, but may you live in interesting times. And I'm here to tell you, you know, I've got a client in the full service leasing business that's really trying to lock in on this, right? Because they're starting to have the opportunity to put electric vehicles in their lease fleet, rental fleet today, and you know, with the costs associated with those, you know, to use historical residual values, you're not even in the right hemisphere. So, right. You know, but now what does that mean? And that's the dilemma and the debate we're trying to spend some time thinking about. So, good question from your dealer principal friend or the president friend, but. Stay tuned and pay close attention because it's all changing pretty quickly right before our eyes.
It is. And I just, you know, the response that I gave was very much what you guys gave. And I don't know if that was satisfactory for him or not, but, you know, it was just the lack of information, the lack of volume, the lack of good information is very interesting in this right now, and people making decisions, fast charge, you know, all of this, people making decisions on investing in something that they really don't know what the payback on that's going to be.
Right.
So, well, hey, Mark, last time we did this, we talked, let's see, We've talked about throughput. We've talked about tech performance. We've talked about a few service metrics. Today, I think you want to move into labor rate. Is that right?
Yeah, move into labor rates or managing your billable labor rates. Okay. We've been talking about capacity and volume and so forth, and we haven't really done more than touch on the billing side, the labor rate side.
So, Mark, I'm just going to, before we move into it, I know that on the parts side, the response we get most of the time when we say, well, you could charge a little more for your part is, man, if I charge more for my part, I can't sell it. How does that relate to the labor rate piece of this?
Well, back to what I said earlier, in most cases, most dealerships today, thank God that demand exceeds capacity. We've talked about the technician shortage. We've talked about the training needs and the equipment needs and the changes and so forth. But a commercial truck dealership, okay, is the expert when it comes to diagnosis and heavy repairs, and they do more of that than anybody else. In fact, they don't do a lot of the maintenance work that gets done. That's going elsewhere. So why is it going elsewhere? So when we talk about structuring pricing, we're talking about structuring pricing by segment of the type of work that you're doing. And that's managing your effective labor rate.
Mark, if I could just chime in there, right, because Keith's trying to draw a parallel here. Look, I don't think there's any question you have more leverage over your service labor rate than you do over your parts pricing. It's highly possible somebody could take their parts business somewhere else, and there's plenty of places where that might happen. But you know what? Especially if this is a 2-3-4-year-old truck, you know, we're talking about a warrantable repair, that's obviously not a big concern to the customer because the OEM's going to pick up that tab. But you're probably the only game in town that can do a lot of the repairs that this customer might be taking a look at. And under those circumstances, you've got a lot more leverage over what you're going to charge that customer per hour than in Keith's scenario.
So, yeah, go ahead, Mark.
You're absolutely right, okay? Unfortunately, our frontline employees many times don't see that and don't believe it, right? Okay,
yeah.
And don't have the structure in place to be able to manage it and hold people accountable and so forth. So, you know, we talked about capacity when we started these podcasts on service and how can we manage our capacity to match the demand or to get closer to the demand. And that's the top of the financial statement, right? That's your labor sales accounts, okay, whether it's warranty internal or customer pay. And there's only two things you need to manage that, and one is billable hours, okay, and the other is your effective labor rate or your weighted average billed labor rate. Everybody has tiered rates today. Unfortunately, most of it is discounting and not true tiered rates by market segment. Just like in parts, Keith, you talked about parts. I know that you recommend a higher gross profit margin for proprietary parts than you do for normal over-the-counter parts that I can pick up anywhere. Why do you do that?
It's all supply and demand, right?
Right. Okay. And it's the same thing in service. We've got the dealership has the expertise because they've invested in the training for their technicians, because they've invested in the special tools, the software application, all the cables to hook up, and the experience of doing it time and time again to repair these trucks. And that is worth every penny that we charge.
Hey, Mark, can I just poke at that for 1 second? Because one of the points you made was, when we think, our thinking on the service side of the business is oriented around our posted door rate, right? Everybody thinks that's the highest that we can possibly go, but we can go lower, and you mentioned discounting just a minute ago. So with that as background, the question that I'd ask you is, you know, when somebody's got a full lot and a pretty good queue lined up, are you aware of anyone that's actually raised their labor rates for people that are calling in? are you aware of any clients that we've got that actually raise their rate when they're slammed in the shop, and to fit this guy in, that they're only going to do it if they can make a little bit more money? Is that something you've seen before?
Yes, unfortunately it is. Okay. And I say unfortunately because I personally don't believe in it. Okay. I do believe in charging what you're worth. And one of the way to manage your capacity to the demand is through pricing, right? And we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on that topic itself, but it is part of it. Okay. But what I don't like are the dealerships that have chosen to, it's going to be 2 weeks before I can get your truck in for this repair, unless you want to pay $20 more an hour, then I'll get in tomorrow. All right. Not so much about the pricing of the $20 more an hour as it is about I'm putting off other customers for a few bucks, right? Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's predatory too, right? And that's sort of, that'll come back to haunt you in the, the customer satisfaction.
So again, it's about having a structure and an accountability and having standards for how I'm going to do my pricing. Certainly the last few years with COVID and all the parts issues and all the workforce issues that every industry is experiencing and so forth, and all the inflation that our government's giving us, thank God, and it's driven up labor rates, okay? It used to be hard to convince a dealer he being the lowest in the market wasn't the place to be when it comes to labor rates. Today, it's pretty easy to get them to adjust the labor rate if they're too low in their market, okay? But they're not managing the discounts that happen. So, you know, if we talk about some of the discounts, okay, we need to segment the business we do. And there's three basic categories of business that we want to price. And those are maintenance items, where I can get done at a dealership, or aftermarket, pretty much the same perceived quality. No difference if I'm going to get a brake job, or I'm going to get a PM, or I'm going to get belts and hoses put on, an exhaust system put on, and so forth, okay? Anyone that owns a truck knows roughly what those prices are. And if we are charging a higher rate for those and the higher parts prices for those, okay, it's pretty obvious to the customer, and it reinforces the fact that he already perceives that we're overpriced. That makes sense, okay? And then there's repair work, which is where we're the only game in town, okay? Very few aftermarket shops can do the type of repairs when it comes to the technical repairs needed on these trucks. They don't have the equipment or the experience or the special tools and the so forth to do electronic diagnosis and electronic repairs and sometimes even overhauling an engine and so forth. Okay. And then the third category are those maintenance items that are the price leaders or the set the perception of your pricing in your market. And those typically, and they vary a little bit from market to market, those typically are PMs, number one. If my price is too high on a PM, I can be high, but I can't be a lot high, because we also perceive to have the factory trained technicians and OEM parts, okay? But I can't be a time and half or double what I can get it done at a mass merchandiser like Love's Truck Shop or TA Truck Shop or Joe's Garage or whatever for a PM. The perception and the difference in the quality just isn't there to distinguish that, okay? So there's usually five or six, sometimes seven or eight competitive items in most markets that you have aftermarket competition, and you need to compete on those pricing, on that pricing, because it sets the perception of all of our pricing. We also need to stop quoting labor rate. We discount it. We're really proud. You call almost any dealership, and if the first question once you get through the service is what's your labor rate, they're proud of it. $220 an hour, whatever the number is. Yet their effective labor rate is probably $30 or $40 below that. So they're not charging $220 an hour for everything they do. All right. but we're real proud of it. And it sets that perception that we're overpriced. What we want to talk about is what's wrong, how much, and when you can have it back, and use total job pricing, parts, labor, tax, shop supplies, the whole ball of wax. There's nothing that will keep the customer coming back more than if I give you a quote for, pick a number, $549.62, and the bill is $549.62, that drives trust, that drives credibility to that customer. He may not like that price of $549, but if I've been professional and give him all that information and the price is that, okay, everybody's happy. Okay, at the end of the day, what the customer needs to know when I'm going to have my truck back, and that's the most important thing to him with the cost of having a truck down these days, particularly with all the issues of getting new trucks and so forth. So aligning all that, building the structure for all of that is a lot of work, okay? But without it, there's no accountability. You know, if we start, and I'm rambling here, so stop me when you want, okay? But, you know, if I start talking about the discounting side, so why is the effective labor rate less?
Go ahead, John.
Well, look, you know, I'm listening with a lot of interest here, Mark, because we sort of started off here this morning saying, hey, you know, managing service capacity is really about hours and rate. But then, which is what you're really saying, which is absolutely, but then as you present that to the customer, you meld that into a price in a delivery commitment, and that's kind of how you finesse. He doesn't need to know how many hours it's going to take. He doesn't need to know what the effective rate is. All he needs to know is what it's going to cost him. But as a service manager, you got to be balancing both those numbers in your head as you're trying to figure out what we're going to communicate in terms of pricing to the customer.
That's exactly right. We are a customer service department, first of all, okay? So we need to act like one. We're there for the customer, okay? And I think most shops do a pretty good job of that, albeit the example I gave early on today. But that's a aberration, okay? Being able to do that, okay, when I'm standing in front of a group of dealers and I say you need to give every customer an accurate estimate every time at write-up, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is it's impossible. And in many cases, it is for them because the structure is not built in their DMS system or in their estimating system, okay, or a manual system, okay. It doesn't matter, but you need the structure to make it easy for your frontline people to price something, be accurate, okay, and the bill comes out to what you estimated, okay? Sometimes there's supplements, obviously. For instance, the typical process we've talked about in the previous podcast is that initial estimate's just for the diagnosis, for the triage, for the accelerated service, for the uptime bay, whatever the OE calls it, right? But for the triage. But then that gives you the ability now, okay, the truck's been diagnosed, it's in your shop, to hold your rate and charge what is right for that particular segment of your business, okay? So we might end up, when we structure rates, we might end up with 10 or 15 rates. You can imagine if that's not structured in your DMS system and in your estimating system, nobody could manage that. Back in the days before computers, we'd break it down to 3 rates, okay, because you couldn't manage more than that manually, okay?
Yeah.
But today we have the ability to do it and the ability to quote a total job price and to have a bill come out exactly what that is. And there's other benefits to that, obviously, in that if we're doing that, okay, closing the repair order becomes a 2 or 3 minute deal, not a 20-minute deal to try and figure out what the customer was quoted and how am I going to make the bill come out to that and all the things that happen way too often in the service department. So
I want to come back to one thing you said earlier. You talked about the door rate or the warranty rate, and you know that many times we're proud of, or I don't remember exactly how you said it, but proud of being able to discount off of that rate. And yet we've got this warranty rate that sits out here at $220 an hour, and we've got some customers that were, you know, delivering 8% of our total labor volume to that are customer pay customers, and they're paying $100 an hour for that. How does that relate, Mark, to, I guess, firstly, how does it relate to the warranty rate itself? Is there a relation between this discounted customer rate, either the whole effective labor rate for customer pay, or even looking at a single customer that's, you know, getting a 50% discount? How does that relate back to that warranty rate, Mark?
Well, as you both know, okay, the dealer agreement says, based on some laws that were passed back in the 70s, okay, that says that the OE has to pay your retail labor rate for labor, okay? And the warranty rate is predicated on what your retail labor rate is. And different OEs manage that differently, with cost of living increases or 100-hour-old survey showing your labor rate and so on and so forth, okay? Technically, if your effective labor rate less specials, because they'll throw out those price leaders, okay, is less than the door rate, okay, they could adjust your warranty rate. And actually, I think they can go back 6 months or a year and take some money back from you and so forth, okay? I've never seen an OE do that, okay? But there is risk there. There is liability there. But that's not what's important. Too many people look at raising their, too many dealers look at raising their labor rate as a way to raise the warranty labor rate, okay? The warranty labor rate, okay, because those laws got passed back in the 70s and so forth, okay, is that's when we started getting today 14,000 warranty SRT times, because they have to manage their costs, right? So they have a whole lot more SRT times to manage their cost. So that drives what I'm going to get paid for the job, not necessarily how much time it takes to do the job, okay? Managing customer pay labor rate, okay, has to do with where your market is, okay? It has to do with how am I going to price myself in my market, okay? Am I the best in my market? In most cases, for that OE, for that brand, a dealer is the best in the market. Very few times they're not, okay? They've got more training, albeit they don't all have perfect training. They have more training, more equipment and tools to do that type of work than anybody else in their market, other than maybe the next OE down the road of the same brand, right? Okay.
Mark, that's particularly true for that third type of repair that you were referring to a little exactly. bit earlier, the one exactly. that requires some expertise.
Right. That's exactly right. So structuring that, okay, is important, but there's a lot of things to play into this. We've talked about structure. We talked about how we set it up, and I can go into more detail on that if you want. But the point is, there's nobody, okay, if there's nobody watching this, okay, there's so let's talk about the types of discounts. We talked about competitive specials. Okay, those need to be just backed into based on, if I do a market survey on PMs for your kind of truck, John, okay, and that average APM is $400 in my market, I can price myself anywhere in the range of those PMs that we've researched the market for, okay? Or I can be a little bit higher, because I'm only measuring myself against the aftermarket at this point, okay? And I am the dealer. So I could be $50 high if I choose to. But I set a price for that and then back into what my labor is going to be and what my parts are going to be. And it gets complicated with parts price averaging and so forth. But we build all that and load it in so that when a customer with that type of truck comes in and I tell them it's $421, okay, I put in a operation code, a pay type, whatever that DMS calls it, and everything bills to that price on my estimating system and on my DMS. So there's no more sitting with the calculator and trying to make it come out to that amount of money again, okay? That allows me to manage that price, and I can spend more time talking about the benefits of having that PM done versus just the price and how I'm going to get to that price, okay? The maintenance work, okay, typically done at door rate, but that gets discounted because somebody believes we're not worth that much money for this type of job and so forth, okay? ironically, the repair work is the one that's discounted the most often. When we look at repair orders and dig into the system, from a percentage standpoint, the repair side, the proprietary side, gets discounted more heavily than any of the other two. Okay. So the first discount is specials, and we believe in those. We think you should. Okay. The second discount that you see often is what Keith was talking about, negotiated rate. I've got a special customer. They buy all their trucks from us. They've asked for a lower rate. We've granted them a lower rate. Okay. Or I get a phone call as a service manager. They just built a new UPS store here. UPS says, I'll send all my trucks to you if you give me $10 off your labor rate or $20 off your labor rate. And somebody makes that decision to do it. Or the parts department has a big customer that's buying parts and they bring a few trucks for service. Can we give them a discounted rate so I can keep their parts business or whatever the case may be? Okay. Or it's somebody's buddy occasionally. Okay. Those typically have been done with a dollar amount. So my door rate's $200 an hour, I'm going to do their work for $175 or $150 or whatever number we come up with, okay? The problem with that is every time the labor rate goes up, I have to go back and renegotiate it. So if we're going to do it, and that's a topic unto itself, okay, but if we're going to do that, then set it at least as a percentage so that as your door rate or warranty rate, whatever you're basing it on, goes up, you don't have to renegotiate that contract, right? Okay. The last one, the last type of discount is what I call arbitrary or service advisor discounts. And that's where the service advisor or the person doing the billing is making a decision how much they're going to charge after the fact. And it happens most often when there was not an estimate, when there was a ballpark estimate to the customer, or the customer said, I don't need an estimate, just fix my truck. That's when you get arbitrary discounting. When I get to the end of the job and I don't know what the customer was told or what was expected and I got to close it, now I'm at the point where I'm going to bill how much I think this customer will tolerate. And those are usually the big, hard jobs. And that's where most of the discounting happens because they're the most expensive jobs. Okay. Sometimes it's because the tech charged out a part I wasn't aware of. And I did have an estimate, but now I got an extra $150 part here. I got to take it out of labor. And there's a million reasons why it happens. The biggest of which was breakdowns in the process, lack of structure, lack of accountability in managing their pricing. And to manage it, I've got to be able to keep the customer updated constantly with any changes to the estimate and get it approved every time. And today we've got the technology to do all that. It's not that hard if you go through the pain of building that structure up front.
So, Mark, if somebody doesn't use an estimating system in a disciplined fashion, they're setting themselves up for discounted labor rates down the road.
Yeah, even if they are, if they don't have the accountability of using it right.
Yeah.
Okay. Almost all the OEs today have I can't think of one off the top of my head that don't recommend or endorse one of the estimating systems. Sometimes their own, sometimes other company ones and so forth. And there's a lot of other ones that are out there in the market as well, okay? But having it and using it is, and having the structure built in it to manage this is the difference maker, right? And
right.
Then the accountability. Because the dealer is not going to, he sees, if he understands what effective labor rate is, he sees the result, okay? But there was probably 300 or 400 repair orders that result came from, and he's not going to dig through those to find out why it got eroded, right? Okay. Why did it get eroded? Where did that money go? I'll tell you this, John, for every dollar you gain, wherever your effective labor rate is today, for every dollar you gain in effective labor rate by managing it, it drops all the way to the bottom line. Okay, without writing another repair order or producing another tenth the time in your shop, it drops right to the bottom line.
Right. So, Mark, I want to go back to one of the things you said, which was the you were talking about the negotiated labor rates, right? So the not the service advisor making that decision, but that UPS that says, I'll bring you all my service business. And one of the things I know that you talk about a lot is, yes, I'll discount it, but I need this from you. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so that so there's too many, trying to be nice here, okay, too many dealers that let this discounting of labor rates up to the service or service manager or service director, okay? And too often what I see is a customer calls or he brings in a truck and he kind of likes the service and he says, you know what, I got 10 trucks. I'll bring them all to you. You can give me a break on the labor rate. Now, this isn't recorded anywhere other than a piece of paper to tell all my frontline people from now on, ABC Trucking gets $10 off the labor rate, right? Okay. The decision's made without ever, there's no accountability, without ever looking at what kind of volume or making that decision based on volume. Okay. Does volume deserve a discount? If I'm buying one truck from a dealership, I'm more likely to pay a price closer to the sticker or above today. I don't know. Okay. But if I come in and want to buy 50 trucks, what happens with the pricing?
Pencil gets a little sharper.
Right. Yeah. So that's my point. So I'm not arguing the fact that volume might deserve a discount. Okay. What I'm arguing about is accountability that you got the volume. And in most, well, not most, but many cases, we're not getting the volume in return for the discount. Okay. And, but the discount was there. I've seen cases where a labor rate was set 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago for a customer and never adjusted. So the effect is I've got a $150 door rate, but that customer is still getting $70 an hour from 8 years ago or whatever. And no one ever looks at it. He's got his own pay type. When we bill to ABC Trucking, it bills there. No one's looking. There's no accountability again. Okay.
You know, Mark, one of the things on the part side anyway, that from the manufacturer is they do a commit program, right? So you commit to buy $250,000 from this vendor. You buy that $250,000, you get something back, right? A rebate. You can buy more parts. You get free freight, whatever it is. And so we've had that same type of conversation on the dealer side, you know, with the discounting that some of these big parts customers want, which is, yes, we'll give you that discount, but after you reach that threshold. Do you see something like that happening on the service side that, hey, you reach that $200,000 of labor threshold with me, I'll give you a rebate back or something like that?
Yeah, I always do a worksheet. Okay, first of all, what's amazing to me is I'll ask them for a list of everybody that has a discounted labor rate, and that's 2 weeks from now before I'll get the list because they don't know it. Okay, which scares the hell out of me. Okay. And what is their labor rate? Okay, once I get it, we look at volume that we're getting from those customers and the gross profit we're making from them compared to other customers that may be giving us more volume and obviously more gross profit and so forth, okay? And they start thinking a little bit. And I do a spreadsheet, okay, that shows them that if there was some structure built to this, okay, so pulling numbers out of the air here, if you do $20,000 a month with me, I'll give you a 5% discount on labor rate the following month or as a rebate or as your word, okay? But if I don't get that number, whatever that threshold is, okay, then the rate goes back to the full labor rate, right? Okay. And then maybe from 20 to 40, there's another discount and so on and so forth, okay? Not many dealers adopt that, but they do start, once they see the data, renegotiating some of those old contracts, okay, that's painful. That's painful, okay, because you've let it go so long and it's never been renegotiated, okay. So it's painful, and you run a risk of alienating the customer, right? Upsetting them for sure.
Yeah, that's a possibility, Mark. But you know what? On the other hand, you might be better off if you upset them, because you're going to sell that to somebody. And it's a kind of a situation where, through your own lack of internal discipline and process management, you've let a customer get the best of you. And it might be time for that customer to head on down the road. Let's replace him with another customer where we can make some better.
It's a hard problem to swallow, though, for those frontline people. Okay.
I agree with that completely.
You're absolutely right. What I said before, in most cases, demand exceeds capacity, and one of the way to manage demand is with pricing. Okay, and dealers are reluctant to do that. Okay, but for the repair side of the work, most dealers, I've been doing this 33 years, and I bet that 85% of the dealers that I've looked at in this time frame, okay, 70% or more of the work they're doing in the shop, some well into the 90s, is that hard work. It's that repair work. It's the proprietary work. It's the work that's not going anywhere other than the next dealer with the same brand, however far away that is, okay? It's not going anywhere, yet their effective labor rate will be off by, I don't know, just guessing, an average of $30, $35 from their door rate.
Yeah.
Now think about that.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
Bad idea. That's where you can command a premium, and you should hold. Right. That's where you need to be the most disciplined.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark, I've got one more question. I don't know what John has left for you, but I got one more question for you. And this is probably a big question for you to answer, but I know that you and Amber have started piloting a I don't know what you guys are titling it, but basically a virtual or
service
or
pricing.
a remote virtual service pricing engagement, where you guys will look at the data, look at the overrides, look at all the things we're talking about here, and doing this virtually rather than doing it on site, because there's so much data crunching and stuff that goes into this. Can you just take us through what this process looks like when you guys engage with a customer? What do you start looking at? What do you start working with to drive this labor rate up? What does that process look like?
So the first step, okay, is to validate where they're at, to document, to audit where they're at, okay? Like I say, I need a list of everybody that has a discounted rate, okay? We segment the jobs into three basic categories: competitive, maintenance, and repair, and look at their effective labor rate by that category. And again, way too often, okay, the one that's discounted the most as a percentage is the proprietary stuff, okay? But we start looking at what is the opportunity to move that. Once we make the decision to go forward and structure our pricing, it starts with market research. And while we do it virtually, we give them the forms, we give them the instructions, but they make the phone calls, which is important because I want them to hear that we make calls to these aftermarket shops as a customer, and I want them to hear what they're up against when they're selling a PM or a brake job or whatever the competitive special might be, okay? Once we get all of that data, okay, and the pricing, we put it on a grid and we look at the range of data. We look at our pricing and see if we're off or not. Then we're going to make a decision, where do we want to compete? Okay, which ones do we want to compete with? Okay, and we segregate those out and we decide where do we want to place ourselves in the market from a pricing. So if the range for PMs on this specific truck was $350 to $400, I might decide to be at $375, I might decide to be $350, I might decide to be at $425, right? And then we're going to work backwards to do that. In order to do that, okay, we've got both parts and service for most of the parts and labor for most of these specials. So now we have to go to the parts department and pull data. So if we're talking about a brake job will be the easiest one to give you as an example. If it's brake shoes, we want to know all the shoes sold. We want to know the quantity we sold. We want to know the real cost on those shoes so that we can do some weighted average costing, because we've got to be able to sell those shoes at one price to make this work, right? So we're going to make more on some and less on others. So we've got to know the mix of what we're doing. So we've got to pull all that data, and it becomes a math problem at that point. And we decide that, okay, we're going to show a cost for brake shoes of, pick a number, okay, $125, okay? Then we know the cost for labor, because we're not going to discount the time paid to the tech in order to compete. The time should represent what the average tech with that skill takes to do it in our shop, okay? So that time times whatever my average labor rate is my cost on the labor. So once I know both of those and I know what I'm selling it for, I know what my total gross profit for the dealership is. Now I've got to split that arbitrarily between the two departments to make it right. Once I've got that done, I can load it into the system, and those specials will bill for that price every time. Okay, now there's always some exceptions. If it's got a Cummins ISX, there may be a add $30 or something on the parts side, okay, or a difference in labor and so forth. Just like you would see when you're looking at a Walmart ad or in the past a Sears ad or whatever, most models or most, in most cases, okay, or add $10 for extra, extra large or whatever the case may be, okay. Once that's all structured and the content is documented and so forth, that only takes care of the specials, okay. Now we're going to do a dealer survey just like we would for a warranty rate, okay, and measure where all the labor rates are in town and decide on our maintenance rate or our target rate that we want to do, okay. And what we want to find is what are my tiers for the repair work. So to do that, we have to weight average all of those specials. We have to do the math for my current mix of work, so it requires another repair order survey based on the new mix of work that we're expecting. We can predict our competitive effective labor rate, we can set our maintenance labor rate, and we can back into what our repair rate has to be to hit whatever target effective labor rate we have. A dealer that does that, does it right, loads it in both their DMS and their estimating system, in some cases that's the same system, okay, and has the disciplines built and the accountability built to do it, okay, will manage their effective labor rate within $5 month in and month out. As the mix changes, and hopefully it does, okay, but as it changes, once I have those disciplines established, or parts pricing changes or the SRT change, I, as a service manager or director, I can change that from my desk, and I don't have to even tell anybody, because when they estimate, they're going to look up a PM medium duty, and it's going to bill whatever price comes out of the estimating system, and that's matched to the DMS and so on and so forth. Okay, so the structure's there to manage it long term so that you're not going through that constantly every time a parts price changes or something else. Okay. That's a drink of water from a fire hose, I know. There's a whole lot of math involved. But essentially, it's about research, okay? It's about finding out where you're at today. It's about structure and setting it up to be able to manage this effectively to the effective labor rate you want.
I was just going to say, look, you know, this started out pretty simple. All you got to do is manage the hours and the effective labor rate. And there's been some great input from Mark here today in terms of, you know, structure and some great ideas in terms of how to do that. Of course, the game we're playing here is we're trying to maximize absorption, right? So we make a lot of money I just would throw one last thought out here before we kind of think about wrapping this up. But, you know, today we're in a different world than we've been in the last 15, 16 years. You know, in the past, you could just put your service manager in a headlock, tell him he's responsible for driving the gross margin on the service side of the business that was necessary. And you could give a secondary hug to your parts manager. But you two guys are responsible for all that there is to make absorption look like the number we need it to be. But today, with a healthy dose of inflation sprinkled over the top, all of a sudden asset management and cost management and being disciplined financial managers is coming back to the forefront. So, you know, these service guys and parts guys can work their tails off to drive all the gross margin that it needs and use all the tools that Mark talked about here today. But my sense is, as we look to the balance of 2023 and into 2024, maybe 2025, that ain't going to be enough. We're going to have to get better at managing costs again. We're going to have to get better at process management again. And we're going to have to start looking for ways to be more efficient and do more with less in the dealerships to keep a lid on SG&A costs going forward.
Yep.
That's, John, what I love about you is you have a way to put all the stuff I talk about and make it sound professional.
Mark, you're the cat's pajamas when it comes to service management. I learn so much from you every time we have these, so I appreciate the additional knowledge. And if I made it sound good, thank you, sir.
You do.
Well, I think this topic. So you're John. You're right. This whole idea of efficiency and doing more with less, right?
Yes.
And then being able to. Be able to charge for what it's worth rather than a arbitrary discount or what, you know, something like that.
Market, right?
Yep. I think that is so important. Mark, I said I had one question for you. Guess I lied because maybe this is question dot A, but you know, when we're approaching this on the parts side from a parts pricing piece, I think Amber says that they'll pick up somewhere between 3 and 7 points, you know, depending where she starts at. When you guys do a typical labor rate strategy, if you will, and install, what does that look like for an increase in labor rate? Is it 5%? Is it, you know, what does that look like when you really work this?
It really is about 80% of the difference between door rate and effective labor rate.
Okay.
It's picked up. Okay. Remember what I said before. Okay. For every dollar you pick up in effective labor rate, it drops all the way to the bottom line of your income and expense statement. Okay. Without selling another tenth of time. Okay, or writing another repair order.
Okay. So 80% would be the expectation then of that delta.
Of that difference, right.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. John, anything else?
Long as I'm sitting next to Mark Martinsic, I know I'm going to be okay. That's just remember that, Keith.
Me too.
Words
Me too.
To live by.
I don't
Me
know.
Too.
Okay.
Well, Mark, thanks a lot. I think that we've spent 3 or 4 sessions here that are very well spent talking about service operations. I know we say that this is where the biggest opportunity for improvement is in throughput and tech performance and rate and capacity management, I guess you'd call it. Anything else that you want to offer before we close this up for the day?
Not really, but just to throw this out, and you've heard me say this a million times ago, service and maybe a body shop if you have one, okay, is the only department when you sell something, you're not done. You still got to produce it. And that's why there's so much of a need for structure and accountability, more so than in any other department.
Okay. Back to John's point of efficiency.
Right.
Okay. Well, John, I think we're going to turn the page in June. I think we're going to get some used truck updates. Anything you want to talk about, set the stage for that?
Yeah, you know what, Keith, I go back to the Used Truck Association meeting last year in October, and the talking heads for this industry, you know, you'd think it was awful and it was Armageddon. We had a forecast that we talked about 6 months ago. I think when we talk about this again next month, what we're going to find is it's still a pretty strong used truck market out there. There are some concentrations of risk and some areas where you need to be really careful. But by and large, I'm telling you, this is still a really, really good used truck market. And I look forward to updating our podcast audience with a little bit more specifics on what that means next month.
Well, I'm excited about that. You talked about learning from Mark. Every time we do this, I learn more and more about the used truck business from you, John. So
I'll try exciting. Not to let you down, boss. Never do.
You never do.
You good. Never do. Good. Well, hey, this was a good one, Mark. Thanks for your time here today.
Thank you.
And to all our listeners out there, again, if you'd like to learn more about what Mark and Amber do on the parts or the parts on the service pricing piece of a service engagement, reach out to Mark at mark@keaadvisors.com. Certainly you can go to info@keaadvisors and we'll direct you in the right direction. We appreciate your time as always for listening to us. If you've got any thoughts, anything you'd like us to talk about, please let us know that as well. And until next time, for John Whitnell and Mark Martinsic, I'm Keith Ely, and the Three Wise Truck Guys are done for the day.
Over and out.
Thanks for listening to Three Wise Truck Guys, the podcast from Key Advisors. We'd love to hear from you. Send us feedback, comments, and questions to info@keyadvisors.com.